I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Your ship has connected.
And you the man, PA.
Happy Monday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the four-hour satellite soiree. GA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Tacoma to Tampa, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. Hey, you're on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
We appreciate you being with us. We come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. See rules and enter for free today at RocketMortgageSquares.com. We appreciate you dropping on by, spending some time with us as we pick our way through the championship games. By now, you know it's going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 55, a little less than 2 weeks from now. And we've got all angles covered this morning on the show. Mark Schlereth is going to join us here on the program. He has won three Super Bowls, two with Denver, one with Washington. The man affectionately known as Stink, longtime NFL analyst, is going to drop on by the show in hour number three. On a Monday, it's also a momentous Monday, so an inspirational sports story coming your way, also in hour number three as well. Not just on the field, but off it, a big weekend around the league. Reports that the Jets could be the preferred destination of Deshaun Watson. And in Detroit, they are parting ways with Matthew Stafford. Where will he land? We'll discuss both, plus Conor McGregor fights over the weekend. We'll discuss that as well, and much, much more. It's all coming your way over the next 4 hours. I'm sure you guys got thoughts. I'm sure you have takes. I'm sure you've got observations. And so let's do it on the phones, 855-212-4CBS after the two championship games. 855-212-4227. Or on Twitter, you can always hit me up, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. In the late game, Patrick Mahomes of the Kansas City Chiefs, once again, too much for their opponent, pulling away and staying away from the Buffalo Bills. And so the Chiefs are going back to the Super Bowl. How about this little stat? In terms of defending Super Bowl champions who had followed that up by hosting the championship game, so either the AFC or the NFC championship game, had happened 11 times before yesterday. Of course, the Chiefs would make it 12. In those 11 games, the defending Super Bowl champion was 10-1. The only time a defending Super Bowl champion would lose at home in the championship game the following year was in 1990 when the Niners were going for a three-peat and lost to the Giants. That was the game Joe Montana got knocked out by Leonard Marshall and effectively ended his Niners career. This is a long way of saying if you are defending Super Bowl champs and have that game at home the following year, you're winning. And the Chiefs did. Which brings us to the early game, the NFC game. It was all lined up for the Packers. This was the first time that Aaron Rodgers had ever played at home at venerable Lambeau Field with a Super Bowl on the line. And in terms of the other losses in the NFC Championship game, which had happened three other times, and another year where they were one and done despite being 15-1 and the number one seed, there was always a way to spin it. Back in 2011, the Packers went 15-1, lost to the Giants, one and done at Lambeau. But you could say, well, just last year we won a Super Bowl, and it's still so early in Rodgers' career that we'll be back. In 2014, they go to Seattle to play the NFC Championship game. They blow a 12-point lead late because they can't recover an onside kick and then lose in overtime. But you could spin it as, well, we were on the road. Nobody ever wins in Seattle, and they're in the middle of kind of a mini dynasty here. The Seahawks had just won the Super Bowl and were going back to their second in a row. When Rodgers, a couple of years later, loses to the Falcons in the NFC Championship game, that was a Cinderella run. They were not supposed to get that far. It was essentially Rodgers putting the entire team on their back, on his back, rather. And by the time they get to an NFC Championship game, he just simply can't do it again, basically out-dueling an entire team by himself. And then last year, going on the road and getting rocked by the Niners, it was, well, this is only year one of Matt LaFleur, and we weren't even supposed to be here. We were 13-3, but that kind of came out of nowhere, and it's just good to see that the Packers have life again after the end of Mike McCarthy's era. So there was always a way to spin the worst losses in Rodgers' history. I don't think you can spin this one. I don't think you can spin this. I think yesterday is an absolute debacle in every single way, shape, and form. It's a debacle for Matt LaFleur. It's a debacle by the defense. It's a debacle by the offense. It's a debacle from the front office's standpoint. It's a debacle for Aaron Rodgers. Because how many more great shots does he get? He's 37 years old. He'll be 38. He's coming off an MVP season. We all assume that he'll win the MVP. But how many more cracks do you get? How many chances do you have with an NFC Championship game at home? And when you look at yesterday, I call it a debacle because there's so many things that go wrong for the Packers. So many. The defense gives up three third down conversions on the opening drive to allow an opening drive touchdown. Wow. Rodgers didn't even get the football and we're down 7-0. The blown coverage on Scotty Miller at the end of the first half is completely inexcusable. It is the one thing that cannot happen at the end of the half. You cannot give up that score getting beat over the top. Rodgers and the Packers offense gets three interceptions in a row of Tom Brady. Three converts into six total points. Six. And at the end of the game, with a chance to score a touchdown and then tie, Matt LaFleur decides to kick the field goal. And on the final series, I hated that pass interference. I hated it. Look, that's just an uncatchable football. That is 10 yards, 15 yards over the head of the receiver, number one. Number two, you've let everything go the entire day. Receivers are getting mugged all day long, which I appreciate. I'd rather the players decide it, and then you decide the game, the refs decide the game with a penalty flag. Everything about this is a debacle. Everything about this is a Packers disaster. And Tom Brady is a witch. He is. He is a witch. You'll never kill him. He's 43 freaking years old. In 2 weeks, he's going to take the field of the Super Bowl. At home, by the way, who nobody has, no team has ever done this, played a home game in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady's going to be the oldest player ever in a Super Bowl. Not oldest quarterback, not oldest starting quarterback, not oldest starting player. He's going to be the oldest person ever on a Super Bowl roster. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It happened. The dreams crushed by the Packers. the dreams crushed of Aaron Rodgers, and Brady is back in the Super Bowl. How did they pull this off? It is where we begin your cold open.
Fournette, the running back. 8 seconds, 7 seconds. Brady to throw. Throws a deep pass downfield. Got Scotty Miller in the open. Makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. Scotty Scooter Miller. And Brady puts it right on the spot. Bucks score with no time left or very little in the first half.
This is the ultimate team sport. And, you know, we've had a lot of people work really hard over a course of a period of time to get to this point. So it's a tough journey to get here. To go on the road and win a, you know, another road playoff game is just a great achievement. And, you know, now home Super Bowl for the first time in NFL history, I think puts a lot of cool things in perspective. Anytime you're the first time doing something, it's usually a pretty good thing.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
That's obviously Brady after the victory. That was Gene Dickerhoff, voice of the Buccaneers. We win, we're going to the Super Bowl. There's a lot to point to, as I just mentioned. A lot to point to in how this was pulled off. First of all, for the Buccaneers and for Tom Brady, take nothing away from them. They went on the road 3 consecutive weeks. I thought they had no chance at that. Brady had never been to a Super Bowl as a wild card team. He had never been to a Super Bowl even playing wild card weekend, even if he was the division winner. He was not the division winner. When we lined up the postseason, Brady was going to have to go on the road 3 consecutive weeks and ended up going on the road to the 1 seed and the 2 seed, beating Washington in the wild card round, no big shakes. But going to New Orleans and winning, going to Lambeau and winning, the Buccaneers have earned everything that they've gotten, everything. And even though Brady throws 3 picks, each one of these victories in the postseason has been different. And the Bucs needed some good mojo at the end of this season. They were 7-5, remember. They were 7-5, and they didn't really look like much of a playoff team. And they went on that run at the end of the season, finished at 11-5, and ended up getting the momentum that they needed going into the postseason. So the Bucs have capitalized. And the Bucs, every step of the way yesterday, also capitalized. But the Packers made so many mistakes. And when I look back at the autopsy on the NFC Championship game yesterday, to me it comes down to Brady threw you 3 interceptions. And you got 6 points out of that. 6. Now, they weren't great field positions, all of them. The last 2 put the Packers back inside their own 30-yard line. 1, I think, was at their own 18. 1, I think, was at their own 24, something like that. But still, in those 2 drives, the Packers went 3 and out and 3 and out. The loss of David Bakhtiari on that offensive line killed the Packers because you had 5 sacks by the Buccaneers yesterday, and it just felt as though Rodgers could never quite get into Rodgers' rhythm, perhaps always because he was worrying about that pass rush. But again, when I look back at this, you had 3 interceptions of Tom Brady at home. When are you ever going to win the turnover battle from Tom Brady that way? You had 3 interceptions of Tom Brady, and you converted them into 6 points with 2 3 and outs. That right there to me is the game. Because even if you just put up 1 other touchdown, or if you get 10 points outside from those 2 drives where you got 3 and out, 3 and out, you win the football game. Or you're at least forcing the Buccaneers to then play catch up. But instead, you're playing catch up all day long, and it came back to bite you at the end. And I did not like the call by Matt LaFleur to kick the field goal late. I didn't like that at all. Because to me, you give Rodgers 1 more shot from the 8-yard line to score the touchdown. I know you need the 2-point conversion, but still, I'd prefer to get to have my shot with my offense versus hoping my defense gives me the football back, and then I have that same shot anyway. There's a lot to pick through here from yesterday's NFC Championship game. 855-212-4CBS on Twitter, DA on CBS. Meraz, what was the biggest point or moment or play you point to, the reason why the Bucs were able to pull off the upset?
Well, I think in the end, when you have the pass interference that they haven't called all game long, which you highlighted, but still, okay, that's still in scramble mode for the Packers to come back. I think to me, it's not necessarily a moment. It's just the fact that Matt LaFleur and this coaching staff Hello, can you figure out a way with tight ends or something to get some max protection? Because Aaron Rodgers was unfunctional at times in that game when they needed big plays on first down, second down, with that Bucs pass rush coming after it. And it wasn't like it was something new in the fourth quarter. This came in waves all game long. Five sacks might as well have felt like 15 sacks the way the pressure was in his face. And I just thought LaFleur and that Packers offensive coaching staff made zero adjustment to help out along that offensive line and just left Rodgers out there to die yesterday.
And let me highlight one thing as well on that point. As I said, this is an abject failure, a disaster, a debacle for the front office as well. Back in April, the Packers used their first-round draft pick on a quarterback. The Buccaneers used their first-round draft pick on an offensive lineman to help Tom Brady. And Tristan Wirfs ended up being one of the best young offensive linemen in football. I didn't like the pick then. I still don't like the pick. I'll never like the pick. I'll never like the pick. I don't care what Jordan Love turns into. And maybe that's close-minded of me. I don't care if he turns into a Hall of Fame quarterback, because you have one of the greatest ever to do it at the end of his career. You've got to give Aaron Rodgers somebody who's going to help you on the field when Rodgers is trying to gun for Super Bowls. And yesterday, their first-round draft pick was sitting on the sideline with a headset on. Could have used an offensive lineman yesterday. Could have certainly used a cornerback yesterday. Could have certainly used a defensive player yesterday for one of those plays that the Bucs got when they needed them, that the Packers didn't. And, you know, Mraz, I don't know what was coached at the end of the first half, but to give up that touchdown to Scotty Miller, if you're the defensive coordinator, if you are Matt LaFleur, everything in the huddle has to be or on the sideline. Whatever happens here, you cannot get beat deep. You must keep everything behind you. We don't care if it's a 20-yard pass. It cannot be over the top of our head for a touchdown.
It's astonishing. You're in the locker room. All you have to do is go back and guard that goal line. You're in the locker room. They're not going to kick the field goal. To allow yourself to get beat by Scotty freaking Miller in that spot is atrocious. It's absolutely atrocious. And another part that needs to be highlighted too, and maybe this is part of Rodgers all getting hurt. Aaron, I mean, 5 years ago, you would have picked up that ball and ran it in the end zone. He had that clear lane on third down and just absolutely throws it in the double coverage in the middle of the field. What are you doing?
You got to
run it
that
in the end zone.
There's a wide open lane. It seemed like there was a wide open lane for Rodgers. I don't know why he didn't take it and run. From a Packer standpoint, it's just an absolute nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. From a Buck standpoint, I can't believe they're in the freaking Super Bowl. I can't believe it. I can't believe we got two more weeks of Tom Brady, Mraz. I cannot believe it. I can't believe we got two more weeks of this guy.
And I told you, D.A., I told you. The last 2 weeks.
I didn't believe it.
Oh, I know. The Buck thing doesn't bother me. It's just the Patriots cheating. How do you feel? Now we have Tom Brady nausea for the next 2 weeks. I got Tony Romo jamming it down our throats about how right he was about this Super Bowl prediction in November. I am already tired of this. I, in the history of my fat life, have never been more disinterested in a Super Bowl 13 days out than I am with this. I am so tired of it.
I was far more disinterested about Patriots-Rams. That one had no juice because the Rams had gotten their way in on that no pass interference, and that it was still the Patriots toward the end. But this one, I mean, it's Mahomes versus Brady. I've got interest in this game. It's just that I can't believe Tom Brady is there. I can't believe they did this. I didn't believe all along the way that this team could go on the road and win three road playoff games. I just didn't believe it. I absolutely did not believe they could go to Lambeau and win this game.
I have no problem admitting we were wrong. We were having conversations in August and all throughout the year when Tom Brady went to Tampa, and I told you it was stupid. He's old. Why should he even go there? The Bucs, they're wasting their time. They can't get to a Super Bowl. You're telling me, well, we know their ceiling is a wild card exit. So, but even that's good for Buck fans. They're in the Super Bowl at home. Tom Brady made the Super Bowl at home. I want to punch both of my retinas through my skull. That's it. I'm tired of watching this.
There have been other teams that played in their home city. The San Francisco 49ers played at Stanford's Stadium back in 1984, and the Rams played at the Rose Bowl in 79, but neither one of those were their home stadiums. This is the first time ever that a home team and a home stadium will be in the Super Bowl. By the way, can I just ask, why was Tony Romo shoehorning in a Patriots prediction at the end of the game yesterday, last night. The Chiefs had just clinched the Super Bowl into the AFC title game, and Rome was talking about how the Patriots are going to be back next year. I'm like, what is going on
with
Rome?
That was bizarre. Yeah, Belichick will be back. Who are you friends with all over the league that you need to make them all happy in these broadcasts? Oh.
The Patriots they didn't even make the playoffs. Why are we talking about the Patriots at the end of the AFC title game?
And Nance is reminding you about the Jaguars and Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. Like, they're rattling off all the good teams. And Romo wants to force the Patriots down our throats when you have base, and we'll get to this later, Deshaun Watson trying to force his way to the Jets. The Bills right in front of us are pretty good, and the Dolphins are pretty good. You think maybe the path's going to be a little harder for New England to get back, Tony? Come back to us. I've never seen somebody suck so bad in big games, but think they know everything when it comes to the big game like Romo does. And I'm sorry, I know it's a CBS guy. It's true.
Romo licks the boots of the Patriots.
Oh.
It's remarkable. Of all the moments coming off of this disastrous year with no quarterback in sight and the division this much better, and that's the time you talk about how good the Patriots are going to be? Okay. All right. Thanks, Tone. Well, a lot to get to this morning here on the show, obviously, with both these championship games. When we come back, we'll have sound check, and that includes Josh Allen on the chippiness of the AFC title game and Leonard Fournette getting emotional after the start of his season this year. It's all coming up next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Glad you're back with us. A happy Monday to you as we break down everything from yesterday's AFC and NFC championship games. We begin on the AFC side of things, as Josh Allen, quarterback of the Bills, could lead Buffalo to the AFC title game, but couldn't get over the hump yesterday against an elite Kansas City Chiefs team. There was chippiness between the Bills and the Chiefs late in this game, involved in the fourth quarter. Here was Josh Allen.
The way it ended, you know, it doesn't sit right with me, how chippy and ticky-tacky got, and I'm disappointed in myself that I let my emotions get to me there, and it's not how you're supposed to play the game of football, and all the other stuff, it is what it is, but, you know, I need to control what I can control, and I did it there late in the fourth, and it's just not good football.
Frustration boiled over for the Bills and for Josh Allen, understandably so. They get this far that emotionally they're kind of taken out of it by, again, an elite Chiefs team. I think that's the one thing about Josh Allen. Obviously, he made huge strides this season. He proved that you can win with him and win big with him, and he's going to be a really good player for a really long time. But Josh Allen does still have some themes of immaturity, and he certainly has grown quite a bit, but he's still very early in his career, and he came out of Wyoming young as a rookie quarterback as well. And was thrown into the fire very early. So he'll learn from this. The Bills will learn from this. You know, it kind of felt like this was a bridge a little too far for the Bills this quickly. It'll come. They'll be really good for a really long time. And I have no doubt in my mind we'll see the Bills another AFC championship game. It just felt like this year was about checking so many of the boxes as you grow as a franchise. One of which being make the playoffs, which they had done. But another one, winning the division. Then it is winning a playoff game. And then it is winning two playoff games. And then next step is going to be trying to make a Super Bowl. But just because it ended yesterday in inglorious fashion against the Chiefs does not mean in any way that this is a disappointing season for the Bills. To me, they squeezed everything they could out of this team. And they're just not as good as the Chiefs. There's just not, at almost every spot on the roster, the Chiefs are just a little bit better. And the Chiefs have been here, and the Chiefs were at home. So it wasn't surprising nor shocking that the Chiefs would win that game and do it somewhat comfortably. Here is Buccaneers running back Leonard Fournette. Remember the early part of the season where the Jacksonville Jaguars just flat cut him, just let him go, just didn't want him around, healthy scratches. And Leonard Fournette had been a first-round draft pick, a top-five draft pick just a couple of years ago by the Jaguars. And so he was damaged goods. People didn't want him. He didn't have a job on the worst team in the NFL and now is going to the Super Bowl. Here's Fournette.
I was crying for like 30 minutes, a couple minutes ago. I was on the phone with my mom, my dad. It's about my journey. First from Jacksonville, from me going to jail, from me getting cut. I think it's just it's a wonderful story how it's playing out.
It's a pretty amazing story considering what happened, again, early in the season. The Jaguars just declined his option, and then they just waived him. They couldn't even trade him. Nobody wanted him. Back on August 31st, the Jaguars had to waive Leonard Fournette because nobody was interested in even giving them a late-round pick. He was seen as a malcontent. He clashed with coaches in Jacksonville. He clashed with Tom Coughlin in Jacksonville. He wasn't in shape. He didn't know the offense. They just thought that he was a total bum, a total bust. And he lands in Tampa, and it wasn't great early on either. Remember, he's a healthy scratch with the Buccaneers. And now, in the last two playoff games, it's like he suddenly started trying. I don't know what happened, who got through to him, what happened with his mentality. But Leonard Fournette went from not caring at all, seemingly, to being a very fundamental and important part of this Buccaneers run to the Super Bowl. And, hey, more power to you. I mean, it would have been nice for you to give that type of effort to your previous employer or also over the course of this entire season. But good on Fournette. I could understand being emotional because he had hit what appeared to be the bottom. And finally, here's Coach K. Over the weekend, Duke loses to Louisville. And Coach K gets a question, which I thought was very innocuous, from a student reporter. Now, I've had my student reporter moments when I was a broadcasting major at Syracuse. I had been in some of those Jim Boeheim press conferences and, you know, terrified that he was going to tear my face off. Hell, I'm still terrified Boeheim will tear my face off if I'm at a post-game press conference with him. So I know that fear. And for Coach K to do this, I mean, come on, dude. Let's play this Coach K clip.
Hi, Coach. I'm just curious as to what the next step forward here is for the team as you guys move into another week of basketball.
Yeah, why don't we just evaluate this game? You know, I'm not into what our next step forward is right now. We just finished the hard-fought game. Yeah, I don't know if, like, when... What's your major? What's your major at Duke? What's your hardest class?
Econ.
Okay. So say you just had the toughest econ test in the world. And when you walked out, somebody asked you, what's your next step? You see what I mean? Does that, you have some empathy and, you know, just give us time to evaluate this game, and then we'll figure out, just like we always try to do.
That is such a weird response from Coach K, because the question is not critical. It'd be one thing if it was like, Coach, you guys played like crap today. You know, how do you rebound after looking so awful? Something crazy like, Coach, you know, who do you have to bench? Are you worried about making the NCAA tournament? You know, is this the worst team you've ever coached? Okay, if you're getting some type of zinger from a student reporter, even that, it's like you can't hold back. But the kid asked, where do you go from here? Or was that the question? It was like so innocuous. Coach K, eat you up with your eyes. I'm going to eat you up.
What's your major? Toughest econ test in the world.
What's your hardest class? I mean, Coach K, you've been doing this for 40 years. That really? That question is what you're getting fired up about? Okay. That is your sound check. A kind Sir Andrew Bogish is a proud journalist. He's been in many of those press conferences. I saw this over the weekend. This kind of went viral on Saturday and then Sunday. I mean, how bizarre is Coach K's response to that totally fair question?
I think you're being nice to him. Bizarre is not even close to the description. I'm not sure what word I could use that we're allowed to say on the radio. One begins with a D that I really would like to use here. I mean, it's just, from every way you slice it, it's ridiculous. And I wish that some of the adults on the call would have jumped in there and, like, broken that up and defended that kid, because Coach K was way out of line. It was a fair question, and he only responded like that because he can see the kid, he knows who he is, and he jumps down his throat with, what's your major? I mean, come on, dude. Your team sucks right now, which is fine. It happens. You're going to get questions. You can't be a jerk to anybody, but let alone a 19, 20-year-old student journalist, and you know exactly what you're doing. He's an adult. Terrible, terrible look.
Come on, yeah, man.
That is definitely a bully move by Coach K.
100%.
He's been in so many of those press conferences, and here's where I have a little bit of empathy for Coach K and other coaches, that when you deal with student media, sometimes student media, it can feel like, I don't know, it can feel like you're babysitting sometimes. I get that. I've been in press conferences as a student media member, and you know, you can be a freshman, you're 18, 19 years old, you're fumbling through a question, it's taking a long time, you're obviously nervous. You know, and sometimes coaches just don't have the patience. I mean, like yesterday, Matt LaFleur didn't have to deal with an 18-year-old asking him questions. So I understand sometimes where coaches can be frustrated after a loss, kind of having to also teach kids, but you're also in college. And so there are college kids around. That is part of this bit. And what's your major? Like, first of all, we get econ majors that are asking questions at Duke and writing up stories on Duke basketball.
Yeah, this is how I knew I couldn't belong at Duke. Don't even know what econ is or why the class is there.
Economics.
Oh, we're short in economics now?
Yeah.
No, economics? We always have.
All yeah, right.
Come on, man.
That's not new.
But it's just, you know, Boeheim does this, and it's always a bad look when you're kind of like whipping the student journalists. I mean, come on. And also, what's wrong with that question? Where right. do you guys, what is it? Where do you guys go from here? Like,
what's your next step? You've lost three straight games. What's your next step is a perfectly sound question.
What's your next step? Right. Well, we want to sit in our misery right now. Could you please just allow us to be depressed for these 24 hours? And don't you think you're getting ahead of yourself? Okay. All right. So anyway, AB has our headline this morning. Mr. Bogues, where do we begin?
Well, we begin with it all being sponsored by Progressive Insurance. You can save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit Progressive.com. The Bills will always have that 9-0 lead in yesterday's AFC title game. The final three quarters at Arrowhead belong to the Chiefs.
Edwards-Helaire diving right side, touchdown! None touched! He ran it in, a big hole opened up on the right side. Wiley, Ryder, Remmers on there, and the Chiefs have three touchdowns in as many drives to lead 20-9.
Mitch Holtis on Chiefs radio. That lead was 31-15 through three quarters. The Chiefs won 38-24 to return to the Super Bowl. Josh Allen's Bills had its chances, but with KC still within striking distance, kicked two short field goals instead of being aggressive.
I thought we moved the ball well enough. We got down to the red zone. We could get the ball in the
Allen
end zone.
Allen finished 28 for 48, 287 yards, two scores, one pick. He was also Buffalo's leading rusher. Patrick Mahomes, meanwhile, 325 and three touchdowns after whatever was going on with his head and neck, plus the turf toe. Two of those scores went to Travis Kelce, who caught 13 balls total for 118 yards. And he might have been the second most impressive KC receiver yesterday. The bad news for them, though, is left tackle Eric Fisher reportedly tore his Achilles late in the win. So the Chiefs have the honor of playing the Bucs in Tampa in 2 weekends. You might have heard that the Buccaneers are the first team to play the Super Bowl in their building after going to Lambeau and holding off the Packers 31-26. It was 28-10 Tampa Bay, but then Tom Brady threw those three picks, but Bruce Arians' defense didn't let the Pack take full advantage.
They've been great in the fourth quarter all year, and we got some great stops.
took a couple chances on offense and tried to get more points, and it didn't work out. But they came back and got the ball right back for us.
It also helped that Matt LaFleur decided to kick that field goal down 8 on 4th and goal from the 8 with 2:08 to go. The kick was good, but Green Bay never got the ball back. Aaron Rodgers then got everyone's attention postgame by saying there are a lot of uncertain futures on the team, including his. Now, before all of that action yesterday, Greg Olsen retired after 14 NFL seasons. His 60 touchdown catches are 8th most among tight ends. He now joins the Fox broadcast team full-time. NBA last night, Damian Lillard scored 39. The Blazers held off the Knicks, 116-113. Portland's lead was as large as 25. The Bucks took care of the Hawks, 129-115. Giannis had 27 points, 14 boards, and 8 assists. The Celtics hammered the Cavs, 141-103. And the Wizards lost their first game in 2 weeks, 121-101 in San Antonio. Wednesday's Grizzlies-Bulls game postponed because Memphis is still dealing with COVID. That is 4 straight games pushed back for them. The Yankees sent 4 minor leaguers to the Pirates yesterday for righty Jameson Taillon. He's coming off the second Tommy John surgery of his career. And the Nationals reportedly signing lefty Brad Hand. It's a 1-year deal worth $10.5 million. How about some big soccer news this morning? Chelsea firing manager Frank Lampard. His replacement is reportedly Thomas Tuchel, who was recently sacked at PSG. And on ice last night, the Penguins scored twice in the third. They beat the Rangers 3-2, the Ducks 3, the Avalanche 1, and the Stars beat Nashville 3-2, Dallas 2-0 after COVID delayed the start of its season. DA, back to you.
That's how you know Bogus is a true pro, using sacked to talk about a fired soccer coach. Sacked is the perfect word there. We don't really say, you know, like Mike McCarthy got sacked in Green Bay, but that's a good one. You know, it kind of feels like that's what happens with like a guy like Mike McCarthy rolling watermelons out there and using that as motivational before he gets sacked. When we come back here on the show in Detroit, they are turning the page in the Matthew Stafford era. Wherever he goes, will he end up on a winner? And who makes the most sense? We'll talk about it next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's going to be a good day with DA.
Bum.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Remember that the DA show is available in podcast form. If you want to listen to the entire show, you can. Full hours are available there. Also, the best of the show, the best 1 hour plus bite-sized version every single day, is also available. So listen to us in podcast form. Just search the DA show on your favorite podcast platform. AFC and NFC championship games. It's going to be the Chiefs and the Buccaneers in Super Bowl 55. The present and the future in Patrick Mahomes. The past and the present in Tom Brady. Locking horns doing battle should be interesting. Early line is Chiefs by 3. That's the early Vegas line. Chiefs favored by 3 points in Super Bowl 55, which is interesting because we've never had to factor in home field advantage into the Super Bowl. And I guess that's kind of a thing because this year, not only will the Bucs be playing at their home stadium, but the teams were not supposed to be allowed to travel until at earliest the Friday before the Super Bowl. There won't be the normal week of activities like media day and the celebrations and the team-wide stuff that they were asking teams to fly in or mandating either Friday or Saturday. Now, the Bucs will be there, obviously, so there is no travel for them. The Chiefs will arrive just a day and a half before. So it's an interesting thing to factor in. There's going to be 22,000 fans at the game, although I have to imagine most of them are neutral. I mean, they might be rooting for one of the two teams, but if they're going to bring in healthcare workers, which is what the NFL has said, which is a cool idea, I can't imagine they're just getting like 20,000 healthcare workers from Tampa, right? So they have to, I would hope that it's a smattering from a lot of different places. So I don't know if there's going to be a significant home crowd advantage. There never is in a Super Bowl, But Tom Brady's back. 10 Super Bowls. 10. There's only been 55 of these played. Brady's been in 10 of them. I'm laughing so that I don't cry. So Matthew Stafford is going to part ways with the Lions. Apparently this is a mutual decision. Stafford wants a chance to win somewhere. Who can blame him? He has played for the Lions for a decade, so that's enough to break anybody. It broke Calvin Johnson. He retired. It broke Barry Sanders. He retired. Matthew Stafford's like, can you get me out of here? And so they are, which is, I think, good and bad. It's sad that the Lions are so bad that they have to part ways with their franchise quarterback. He's by far the best quarterback in their franchise's history. I mean, you could go back to Bobby Lane of the 50s, but I think Matthew Stafford's a better quarterback than Bobby Lane. Lane might have won NFL championships, but I think Stafford overall is a greater quarterback than he was. But either way, this is the Lions' fate that the only nice thing that they have, they've got to trade. So potential destinations. Okay, here's a couple of the teams that have popped up. Washington, the Colts, having just lost Phillip Rivers. The 49ers, who knows about Jimmy Garoppolo's future. The Patriots, obviously a big goose egg in the middle of their quarterback solution. And the Denver Broncos, where Drew Lock has been very, very up and down. Mraz, is there a team that you see out of those five or something else? Another team that feels like the appropriate destination for
him? I think New England feels like the appropriate destination, to be honest with you. I think that his aggressive downfield style, I think, could fit a little bit more of what Josh McDaniels wants to do and not be so stuck in the double tight end situations. And I just think that that's the kind of quarterback, if New England is not going to be high enough to draft one, that they feel like they could probably use for the next 3 years or so and get Bill Belichick to keep pushing for playoffs and Super Bowls.
It means, though, they got to trade draft picks, and the Patriots are always hesitant to do something like that. Sure. So they're not just going to flat out release them. They're going to get something for them, potentially a first-round draft pick. I would imagine the asking rate for a guy in his prime at 33 years old is a first-rounder.
That's fine. Again, I think Bill Belichick has to have a realization moment and understand that he can't win without a quarterback. His quarterback is in Tampa in a Super Bowl right now, so maybe change up your philosophy about holding on for picks to hope you draft the next Chase Winovich.
I like the Colts as a destination. They just ran this thing with Phillip Rivers and got to the playoffs, and Stafford's better than Phillip Rivers, and you get Matthew Stafford for, I would say you're getting 4 years out of Stafford, I would imagine. He's 33 years old now. You're probably going to get 4 years out of him. And for the Colts, they're built to win right now. They've got a really good defense. They've got a good ground attack as well. They've got a coach that everybody likes. They've got a coach that's really good with quarterbacks as well. They just proved that they can hook up Phillip Rivers to the rejuvenation machine. And so I think Stafford makes a lot of sense there. Obviously ends up coming down to who wants to give up what, because the Lions aren't going to part with him easily or cheaply, unless they really just want to do him a solid and send him to a place that he wants to go to. But I think that they'll be able to extract at least a first-round draft pick. We'll see if there's a bidding war on Stafford. It sucks, but it also says that for the Lions, they really are rebooting, totally retooling, that he's really their only tradable commodity, and they can get something for him, and then they try to start again. But can I sit here and say that the future is bright for the Lions? No. Who knows? I mean, you've got to find the next Matthew Stafford. And Matthew Stafford was the first overall pick in a draft after you went 0-16, so there wasn't much thinking there. He was the franchise QB. You picked number one. You needed him, and you took him. When you start drafting at 5 and 7 and 10 or 2 or 3 or even 1, there's not always the easiest solution just staring you in the face. For the Jaguars this year, there is. For the Lions, oftentimes, there has not been. So they'll try to start over, but how long it takes and if Dan Campbell's the right guy, those are all questions that we'll have to wait and see. When we come back here on the show, we continue breaking down yesterday's NFC and AFC championship games. When we return, can the Chiefs be beat?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.